Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Happy Friday and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Michelle Pache, and I'm here today with Dr. Hayes and Dale Hoffman. We warmly welcome you to the show, and thank you for choosing to be with us. Today is March 28, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk with our hosts. We encourage you to call in with your comments or questions, allowing you to actively strengthen and deepen your forgiveness. So now let's welcome Tim and Dale in the process of learning and practicing forgiveness.
Thank you, Michelle. Welcome. Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio on this fabulous Aramaic Friday. And is Dale already with us?
Yes, Dale is already with us.
Hello, sir. How are you today?
I'm phenomenal. I'm doing great.
Wonderful. Well, we're just thrilled to have you back. I was listening to the show on Friday. I was driving, so I couldn't do much participating, but it was a wonderful show. Or one of the things I remembered was the Michael's little riff about how the Aramaic teachings of Yeshua were collapsed in the Apostles' Creed to the little comma between when he was born and suffered and died and was buried. And I know at different times when Michael talks about that, he talks about different hits he's gotten intuitively about why that happened. And I thought that might be a place for you to start. Do you get into the politics at all? Do you think it happened mostly because of the translation from the Aramaic into the Greek, or what's
no,
your
it was
take on?
That definitely had nothing to do with the Aramaic into the Greek. It's the funny thing is it's so much more complex than you'll ever be able to read in a book or get in a sort of in a workshop. As an example, it's almost like the subject of Mary Magdalene or the life of Jesus or the lost years of Jesus. You can read 30 books about any particular subject, including, you know, things like the Roman Catholic Church, whatever it may be, and every single one is going to give you a completely different set of parameters, views, and a completely different history, and it's very rare that they actually jive with each other. But when they do jive with each other and there's something that's kind of a bit more concrete, then I tend to kind of follow the things that do jive. I haven't really... in the last few years, I haven't spent nearly as much time looking into, like you say, you know, the politics of it as much. I kind of lost interest. But the thing is, I've done plenty of research and plenty of study about things like the Council of Nicaea, people like Constantine, or interesting characters like Pope Leo, who was in power at the time of Martin Luther. And the thing that I find very unique is how people, these ideologies, these modern Christian beliefs about what Jesus supposedly was or was not about, it's funny how people just eat whatever it is that's fed to them by the system not actually doing the research themselves. A perfect example would be everything going on with Darren Aronofsky's new film, Noah, that hits the theaters today with Russell Crowe and Emma Watson and everything, because there's all these people who haven't even seen the movie who are blasting it, saying it doesn't follow. This is a very interesting subject, and I wish Darren knew more about the subject to be able to use this as a platform to inform people, or maybe he just doesn't want to rock the boat, you know, for because of ticket sales. I don't know. But there's this whole slew of, you know, quote-unquote Christians that are literally verbally attacking him all over the Internet, in the media, in the press, saying that he took artistic license with the story and he didn't follow it exactly to the letter of what's in the Old Testament. And I thought, well, that's very, very interesting, because I can almost guarantee you that about 99% of the people that are attacking him don't even know where the Noah story came from. They probably thought it was something that was originally in the Bible, and they thought that, you know, who knows, maybe they still are believing that what's in the Bible written in that form is exactly as it is. And it's kind of a mess because, as an example, how many of those people that are attacking him have even heard of Gilgamesh, which is an old Sumerian, basically like a written play that is, we're going back about maybe 3,000 years now, long before the earliest parts of the Torah, the Bible, were written. Noah was directly, you could say, borrowed straight out of Gilgamesh, which was this old drama. Noah, the whole story of the ark, the you know, animals in pairs, the two doves that are sent out in return, etc. And I find it very interesting that it's like the attacks that Darren is getting for making this film with his own artistic license to make it into a drama, and he's been very open in saying, look, we're not following this to the letter of what's in the Bible. This is something to be for entertainment purposes, and he's getting attacked for it when the people that are attacking him most likely don't even know where the source of what it is they're talking about even comes from, or that it wasn't actually something that was originally from the Bible but was in fact much older than that. And it's a very interesting byproduct of when you have such a strong religious culture that builds up an ideology, surrounds its philosophy, I don't know if we'd even call it a philosophy anymore, surrounds its ideologies with a pretty ironclad fence with barbed wire, and it's plugged into an electrical current so that you can't get in or out of the system very easily. And then what they'll do is they'll spin doctor the information for those people that are within the fence and tell them, look, don't second guess this. We'll give you the information you need that's safe, that's accurate, and basically just eat it up and you'll be okay. We're all in this together. Unfortunately, the information that people get when they're inside that fence is not accurate, and it is spin doctored, and it is heavily altered, the nuance is gone. Of course, you pull the feminine and the experiential aspects out of the Jesus teachings so that it becomes about a physical person and us giving up our own power of transformation to that one physical person. And it's like, you got them. If you tell them, as an example, look, hell exists after you die, heaven exists after you die, so if you do exactly what we say in this lifetime, you're going to be okay, you've got them on the hook. And then, of course, you say, Your money needs to finance this system so that we can reach other people to get them within the fence too, because the fence is the only thing that's safe. When in fact, Yeshua was the guy tearing down the fences. He was the guy that would have, he would have been talking about that one little comma and saying in the Apostles' Creed that we're speaking of, and saying, hey, wait a second, you know, you put a comma here, you change everything. And people just aren't educated enough, and I'm not saying in theological seminaries or any kind of biblical institutions, that you're not going to get what's accurate there, you're going to get what's accepted, okay? And unfortunately, people just, they don't know, and it's, I think of Yeshua on the cross saying, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do, and it's exactly what's happened with modern Christianity today. And the reason we know they don't know what they're doing is because it's filled with hostility and judgment and fear. And we can see that, how do we find that place inside of ourselves that can say, look, this is what it is, call a spade, but where can I remove it in my heart that's somehow drawing this in and recreating this within my own frame of reference, essentially, and pull that out of my own heart, and how do I do that? And then you can actually get up there and say, look, you know, and you can use something like Noah could be such a great learning tool for a lot of people to say, hey, wait a second, this story didn't start with the Bible. It started much earlier than that. But we're not supposed to know things like that. We're not supposed to know sort of those undercurrents. It's truly a mess. Biblical history is an absolute, if people actually do their research, it's a mess of epic proportions. So there's the Noah epic plug there. But
well, and I have done a lot of reading of Joseph Campbell beginning back in the 70s. Have you
absolutely
read the Joseph Campbell stuff or some of it? And Joseph really shines very bright light on what you were just saying, that most of these stories of the virgin birth and the creation myth and the flood and the parting of the seas and all of these things, they exist across cultures, across centuries and centuries, from language to language, and there are these common themes that really can be a learning tool. They can inform our lives if we're not too rigid about it. So to get into the flow of the show, I probably should have done a brief introduction, but let me do it this way. Let me ask you, what do you want people who come to your lectures or your seminars or your workshops, what do you want them to get out of it? What's the point of all of this conversation?
Well, it's funny because just yesterday, my first book that's going to be released, I should say. I have two in the can that are going to be held for a little later. But I was just yesterday putting in a quote from Joseph Campbell that I'd like to quote here. It was put at the beginning of one of my chapters from a recording that actually happened right around the time that I was born, a little over 40 years ago. I just want to read the quote because it has a lot to do with what I do out there. He says, in the Christian tradition, there is a very decisive problem in distinguishing between the sense of the term Christ and the sense of the term Jesus. Jesus is a reference to a historical character. Christ is a reference to an eternal principle, what we call the Son of God, the second person of the Blessed Trinity, which is before and after all the ages, and this aspect is not historical. The thing that the main core of what I do is to launch off of a realization like that and let people realize, in terms of the historicity, the facts, you can put the word facts in quotes, we will probably never know who altered certain things, where certain things came from, and it doesn't matter. What matters is what we do know. Can we use that for the transformation of our being? And the thing, one of the most intense or profound or just incredibly humbling experiences for me is to just give people what something means in its earliest Aramaic or Greek or Hebrew, whatever the language may be, Coptic, especially from the teachings of Jesus, and just lay it to people and say, look, this is what it means. And to feel it pop for people. And it's different. What I'm doing is not about a literality in terms of colloquial meaning. What I do is I boil it down to the essence and say, look, this is the common meaning of this, and people will, like, hang on that. But this is what that actually means. Aramaic gives us the luxury, or the ability at least, to be able to break it down to each word to its phonetic components, which literally, it's almost like the how-to is embedded within the words themselves. And basically what I'm trying to get to people is that it's not about the information. It's about transformation. It's not about learning some kind of thing that will somehow, like, this is the missing piece. It's about the realization that you already are whole, you already are complete. And, in fact, what we need to be doing is peeling back the layers, which is why Michael is so focused on forgiveness. It's exactly what it is. It's burning the layers and peeling those layers back. and it's getting people in touch with. Before I do a lot of my talks, I say, look, I want you to let, and of course not everybody can do it, some of the more cognitive people have to just scribble notes, which is fine, you know, and cling on every word that I'm saying, but I usually start my talks by saying, I want you to listen in a different way than you're used to. Let go of needing to understand everything I'm saying, because I truly am not speaking to your brain. Right now I'm communicating from and through my heart, from and to and through your heart as well. And if you can just pay attention to feeling, then you'll actually be able to sit in this experience with me and feel that energy, feel the essence of that, as opposed to a mental cognitive understanding. You come into a direct experience of truth. And a lot of people just can't do that. Well, it's not that they can't. I don't think that they just, it's allowing themselves to do it. Like, as an example, when I'm breaking down words in Aramaic, and I tell people over and over again, but it's like a lot, they just won't hear it in some cases, that it's not about understanding what I'm telling you. It's about letting the transformational energy of these realizations crack your heart open and burn back your veil. That's really what it's about. It's not about the information. It's about transformation. And for me, it's almost like the rest are details. The words that I use are just points of entry to pull people back into that portal that's already within them, that opening, that space. If we could just allow ourselves to be open and allow our heart to feel and flow, you can come to the end of a two-hour gathering with myself or Michael or whoever it may be, and say, I really don't understand what they talked about for the past 2 hours, but I feel the shift in my being, and in the end, that's what's real. Because the mental stuff is, as Michael would say, just BS. It's belief systems that are clogging up your mind. You can't get there from here. Right now I'm pointing at my forehead. You get there from actually putting it into practice and walking the talk.
Well, thank you. That was one of our best intros. And as you've said so many times before, the work you're doing and the work you do with Albert LaChance and the work that you promote that Michael does is really about making the practical change in your life. And that's what we're here to support people doing, to learn about these tools. And let me just put a quick plug in this show for the website where Dr. Rice and Jeannie have made available an extraordinary array of tools, www.whyagain.org. If you go there and click on the red and white bullseye, it takes you to a page where, for absolutely free, you can download Chapter 24 of Michael's book. Elsewhere on the site, you can read the entire book for free. But on that page, you'll also be able to download the most recent version of the 7-step worksheet process, which is called the Reality Management Worksheet. That's the technical tool for doing forgiveness, as Dale was just talking about it. And there are 5 or 6 audio files available for free download of Internet shows just like this, where Michael and or Jeannie have walked someone through the process to actually do the worksheet process on a real-life problem they were confronting at the time. So let me switch it up a bit and ask Michelle if there's anyone with their hand up, since we'd like to give the audience a chance to ask Dale a question. Are you there, Michelle?
Yes, I'm here. There are 3 people right now with their hand up. And Dale, in the chat room, Dale's comment about the Joseph Campbell quote had me looking in to see if I could find it. And that was a kind of a long passage, so they had a lot of other quick quotes. And so we're talking about some of them I've shared. God is a metaphor for that which transcends all levels of intellectual thought. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, it's so very clear. Yeah, Joseph says so clearly that when you realize, as an example, it's not about, as an example, Jesus being born through a virgin human mother so much as it's about Christ being born through the virgin or pure human heart. It's another quote of Joseph's. That's great.
Okay, so Dale, actually we have one of your neighbors on the phone here with her hand up from Wilmington. Hello, Susan.
Hey, Michelle, thank you. I had to unmute my own phone. Hey, Dale, this is Susan from Wilmington.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm phenomenal. How are you?
My heart's beating a million miles a minute, and I've done 3 worksheets since I raised my hand, so bear with me, if you please. I'm really interested. This is an interesting question that I have for you. Yesterday, and I know that the situation is an incredible story for me to heal, and it has offered me incredible opportunities up until now, and it will continue, I'm sure. I'm happy about that. So yesterday, I was in the presence of a person that I have worked for about 7 or 8 years, and recently I have Facebooked you and also this person. This person is very loyal to the King James Biblical Christian. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying. Anyway,
yeah.
So him and his wife are in the process for the last 2 years of separating, divorcing. And I have been here as a support for both sides. I've actually got her to do worksheets. I've got a couple of the boys to do worksheets and have introduced the work even to him, given him the DVD, Healing Through Relationships. And finally, when his wife told him, even though I have helped, she's still going to leave, he turned. And yesterday our conversation went to him saying that I was a Gnostic and that it was unbiblical. Now, this was a friendly conversation. I held a space mm-hmm. of love for him. I told him he was love. I've always reiterated that. I knew in this situation that I was undercover in who I was, that we both loved the same person, Jesus, Yeshua. Mm-hmm. We just had different beliefs, and that I was having to face the fear that I wasn't safe and that I was in a place of being attacked. And so what he said is he doesn't want his wife to be influenced by me because she's in a very vulnerable situation. And I agreed that that she is. So, Dale, his question to me was, and I was totally over my head with this, was he was, I said Jesus spoke Aramaic, and that's what I wanted to go back to his original teachings and find out exactly what he said, because I thought it was distorted by the Catholic Church and by King James. And so he had a Bible in front of me that had three translations. One was King James, one was the New International Version, which he really enjoyed reading to me, and another one was another version, which he didn't say, and I didn't notice which one it was, but it was in the same Bible, and they were side by side. And his question to me, when he really got down to it, was he repeated several times that Jesus was a Jew and that he spoke Hebrew and that he had been to Raleigh and seen the Dead Sea Scrolls. And it was all of that was over my head. So I didn't know what to say, and I wanted to run this by you.
Okay. I've seen the Dead Sea Scrolls. I saw them in Raleigh. I saw them in Chicago. I saw them in Boston. I saw them in Philadelphia. So yes, I've seen the Dead Sea Scrolls too many times. There's a huge misnomer. One of the things is that Hebrew was not a common language at the time. Hebrew, for someone that lived in the Galilee, would have only been spoken in the temple. It only would have been spoken for holier purposes. The common vernacular at the time was actually not Hebrew. That's a huge mistake and misunderstanding for him. It was Aramaic, and it was a very specific, very, very specific Galilean dialect that could be very clearly heard to be different from that which was spoken in Jerusalem, such as during the crucifixion when one of the guards says to Peter, you know, your speech gives you away. You must be with the Galilean, because Galilean Aramaic was so unique. It was a little bit softer. It's the sounds that would be more like v or v down in Jerusalem were more like woo sounds. They were softer. The hus were more like k down or up in the Galilee. It's just a matter of the guy not knowing. And there's nothing you can do. What I will say is this. It's never going to be about the information you do or do not have. It's about exactly what you did do, which is, are you able to be open and hold that love conscious, active, and present? Because what happens is people read a few books, and then all of a sudden, bless their hearts, they become experts. And usually when people ask me questions, and I will say this quickly, too. You mentioned the NIV. the only Bible that I recommend people do not read, do not support, do not put your money into is the New International Version. It's the most monopolized, politicized, excuse the term, bastardized, so far so that the Southern Baptist Convention even disowned it about 3 years ago at its annual convention in Charlotte, North Carolina, and said that we're not going to touch this one anymore. It's just too far gone. And they let it go. It's just a horrible, horrible translation. What I'll say about the King James is the guy, bless his heart, he's obviously never read about the actual translation of the King James. He's probably never read the Imprimatur or the intro to the book itself. He's probably never read about how it was translated, who it was translated, who King James was, what about his relationships, what about his mother and what she stood for. The only thing that really matters is not that you learn more and more information to combat, because all that is, it's going to keep you from having to forgive what's in your heart. What matters is that you, exactly what you did, and it's holding that space of love, because people just simply, I started the show right off with it, people just aren't informed, and they don't actually know the factual backstory, and they'll get a little blip from some book that they read, usually bought in a Christian bookstore. And I've mentioned on this show before that I've spent countless hours over the past 15 years going into Christian bookstores and going through books on Islam and about the Quran, and I've yet to find one that was actually accurate about either, ever, about Islam as a faith or the Quran as a holy book. It's an interesting phenomenon that, like I said in the beginning of the show, that when people are within the fence, they're only fed things that are safe to keep them in the fence. And they don't need our pity. There's nothing like that. Of course, they would roll their eyes if I even mentioned that. All that we need to do is take care of our neck of the woods and hold that space and know that convincing will never work. As an example, if I ever get put on a big talk show with some, you know, Bible thumpers, it's not going to matter the information that I have. What's going to matter is what people feel. Are they feeling love? Are they feeling consciousness and presence? That's really what it boils down to, is that I'm practicing forgiveness. I'm removing the veils from my own heart. And in terms of personal study, exactly like Ed said earlier, the information will never take the place of true transformation. It just will never, because the information exists within the veils. Today's facts are tomorrow's fodder. Today's scientific impossibilities are tomorrow's absolutes. And in a lot of cases, today's scientific absolutes are tomorrow's joke. You know, how could we have ever believed that? It's the same with biblical scholarship. Up until the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Nag Hammadi were found, people didn't, basically the Catholic Church especially, said that all those Gnostic books didn't exist. And I will say that if someone calls you a Gnostic, I would consider that quite a high compliment, because modern people don't even know what Gnosis means. Gnosis means knowing. The way it's translated in English is usually knowing. But Gnosis, as in knowing, coming from the Greek, and I twinge sometimes when people say Gnostic. When I hear the jub of the G sound, it makes me want to laugh. But Gnosis doesn't mean knowing as in your head. What it means is literally direct experience, to have a direct experience of realization. If he's talking about, you know, Jesus speaking only Hebrew, of course he would have spoken Hebrew. He was a Jew. But the mistake of believing that he would speak it colloquial as in a common everyday language is, that's something that's just, that's a really, bless his heart, that's a really big error. It's something that in class number one about lingua franca back then, that would have been blown out of the water in the first class. It's a real basic piece of information. Hebrew was not the common vernacular spoken colloquially in the Galilee or in Jerusalem, anywhere in that region at the time. It was reserved for the temple. And that's very, very basic. It's a funny thing, too, because Aramaic and Hebrew are sister languages. Many of the words are virtually identical. When you actually write them down, in most cases, the Aramaic and the Hebrew are exactly the same. They're just spoken slightly differently, and the vowel sounds are usually interchanged and things like that. But you did exactly what you needed to do, Susan. You held that space. You stayed open. You radiated that love. And the main thing I do tell people, though, when they ask me what should I say in those situations, I say forget any kind of a coined phrase. Any memorization of a coined phrase is you coming from veil. If you're going to come from that space, it's got to come from a place where it's not planned, and it comes from the center point of your being so you can be spoken through. And I think it sounds like you did that quite well, because there's nothing you could say that he probably would have heard anyway. He'll see the example with your life. That's just what it boils down to. And you did a great job, I think, what it sounds like, regardless of how you feel that you did.
Thank you, Dale. Well, I can say that the one thing I said to him is I was able to smile through it all, because deep in my heart, I feel compassion and love for him. Absolutely. I said, well, one thing we can agree on is that we both love the same man. Wouldn't you say that? And he nodded yes and smiled. And I said, and what we're taught is that we're created in the image and likeness of the Creator, which is love. And I said, that's true. And he said, yes. And I said, and in the presence of love, everything is healed. And he agreed with me. And I said, so then what we can agree to do is hold the presence of love for each other and for your wife. And in that presence, like Jesus held, we will all be healed. And that's
see,
the way we left it.
You got it. You did it. You were just fine. I know you well enough to know that it's about heart. You understand that. It's just on his part, I don't mean this in any kind of a judgmental way, in a bad way, it's just a lack of education. It's a lack of actually knowing, of actually doing the required study that's outside of the predetermined ideological patterns that the established church would basically feed you in terms of what to read. You did great. I'm proud of you. I think it sounds awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. I did remember, too, I said, so let's cancel our goal to be right. And I canceled my goal to be right. And then he said to me, oh, I don't want to be right. I'm just telling you the truth.
Yeah.
And I was laughing.
Yeah.
I said, okay,
and, you know.
That's okay. Yeah,
yeah,
I know.
That's usually when you hear me say, bless their heart. You know, it's like, just bless their heart. You know, it's a Southern phrase that has many meanings. But to me, I literally mean it. Just blessings. There's his work is not yours. You know, yours is yours. So I think you did great.
Well, when I walked out of the house, I was thinking to myself, I felt strong in my legs, I felt good in my heart, I was happy, I was smiling. I really felt good, and I know that because of all the work I've done around the worksheets and the breathing, that this work truly works, because there was a time when I felt the need to hide who I was and what I thought and because I had the belief and that I wasn't safe, and I had a goal to be safe. And I appreciate you and what you're doing. So thank you for all around. And thank Dr. Tim and Michelle, too, for the show, and Dr. Michael Rice. And Jeannie, I'm grateful for the work, and I'm continuing to move forward. So thank you. I'll sign
Susan.
Off with that. Yes,
Susan.
Ma'am.
I'm going to be in town next week, so I should visit and do some breath work.
That sounds wonderful, Michelle. I look forward to it.
Very good. Thank you.
Bless you. Thanks.
We've got a couple more callers. Would you like to synthesize anything there or move on?
No, I think let's go. Susan did great. It's awesome. She came from her heart. It's really all that matters, because in the end, we really don't know the truth in terms of the information. It's just about totality. There's certain things we do know, such as languages at the time. That's something that's – it was very much like a sort of first-class mistake that was made, you know, in terms of the man she was speaking of, thinking that Hebrew was spoken colloquially. We know clearly that it was not. But, you know, in the end, it's like I said, it's not about the information. It's about heart, period. So –
except for in the South, bless your heart. Really,
yeah,
meaning
so,
you're idiot.
Yeah.
All right. So Sunny is on the line now, and we'll check in with her and see what she's got to share.
Hi there, Dale. And hopefully Rex is listening as well. Dale, this is Sunny. I had texted you in Facebook last week, and I can't thank you enough. Just to give you a brief, I'm like in Indiana, and there's no one else around me. Michael had come here and did workshops through my church, and the church has disbanded, and then there's no follow-through as we do here through the radio show, and I don't know of anyone who has followed through with Michael's work except for myself and all the land. So this radio show and my ability to reach out to you and have those supports is just really huge to me, and I cannot thank you enough. The Hebrew language is said to be somewhat older than the Aramaic. Is that not correct?
Well, here's the thing. They're both exactly the same root sounds. We have evidence of Aramaic being spoken back to about the turn between the 12th and 11th centuries BCE. We have the earliest evidence we have of Hebrew is that it was written as early as the 9th century BCE. It's about a 200-year difference there. But what's less important, one of the things I think that's burned a lot of scholars or turned a lot of scholars off from the more experiential aspects of the Aramaic parts of the Jesus and teachings and the Hebrew parts of it is that a lot of people are sort of making Aramaic or Hebrew into some sort of miracle languages. But in fact, Phoenician, Akkadian, Canaanite, those are all languages that go back far, thousands of years prior to both Aramaic and Hebrew. It's a subject that a lot of people don't want to talk about because they want to talk about Aramaic and Hebrew like some sort of miracle languages. And I say it's not a miracle language, but it is a language of miracles. In fact, what most likely happened, although we don't know, is that they both basically probably popped up around the same time, with Aramaic having a slight lead. If you look, go in any linguistic studies, you can look at John McWhorter's, a great one at Manhattan University. There's different, or Manhattan College. There's a lot of different people that you can get timelines of languages, and they all look a little bit different. But generally, Aramaic comes out a little bit before Hebrew, but really in the end, it doesn't matter because they're basically... they're so close, especially in the beginning. Those two languages were so close that they were probably indistinguishable from each other. They have the same root sounds. They have all the same letters. They have all the same consonants, all the same vowels. They were organized around the same in the same patterns of three consonants with the vowels moving around and changing to change the meanings of words. But all of both Aramaic and Hebrew came from languages that were much older, like Akkadian. And the Akkadian language is a language that goes... What's that?
The four Semitic tribes?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Semitic languages, people think Semitic is Aramaic, Hebrew, and Arabic, but it's also Akkadian, it's Phoenician, it's Sumerian, it's all of these old languages that go back thousands and thousands of years. And the thing that's important, though, is that the root sounds that are in Aramaic, other than slight differences in terms of how they were pronounced, are still the same today, Aramaic and Hebrew, as they were going back 3,000 years before right now, or even slightly before that. We don't know the definites of when and how it all happened, though. We really don't. Anybody that says that they do is claiming something that we actually don't have definite answers to.
So you work with the Eber letters and Strong's Concordance back and forth to accomplish where you go with some of your work, or you're beyond
that? That's a good question. Generally, what I do, I've got, as you say, Strong's Concordance. I've got Strong's Concordance. I'll generally, when I work from Aramaic, the main thing I work from are Syriac texts from right around the 2nd century, the turn of the 2nd century, about halfway through. I work with copies, as an example, of the Kaboris manuscript, which is an 11th century copy of a 2nd century text. And I have that open, actually the actual original parchments. I have digital images, real high-res digital images that show me, I can even see if an ink blot soaked through from the other side of the parchment, which could change a letter, could change a vowel sound, which changes everything. But generally what I have is I'll have several different Aramaic sources, electronic and ones that are photos of actual physical sources. I'll have my several different Greek concordances open in front of me. And sometimes I can cross-reference Hebrew, but the thing about the Hebrew is the meanings in Hebrew and the meanings in Aramaic are so close that, like I say, those consonants and those root sounds, they mean the same thing in both languages with just slight variances. Basically what I seek to do is look at what are all the nuances of what something means, and if there's any essence to what I do, it's how do I awaken the experiential thread? How do I get the absolute core out of what this means experientially, not mentally? And what is it? What do the root sounds boil down to? You can actually translate Aramaic letter by letter rather than even word by word and come out with something that's actually even more accurate than translating the colloquial meanings of the words. It's a challenge, and it required decades of study, but even more so, I think the real challenge isn't that. The real challenge is opening my heart to really let the true meaning come through. And when you unlock the real meaning, what's called the sod, or the secret meaning, it's the fourth pardes, peshat, remez, drash, and sod. That sod level, when you unlock the secret, is what they called it, the secret meaning that comes through revelation, I burst into tears and I laugh, and it's like, oh my God, of course that's what it meant. It's rewarding beyond it. Even before anybody else even hears about it, just me sitting at my desk doing the work is really rewarding. I shake and I shudder and I'm quaking, and it's just an awesome experience.
Yes, and that is the point too much of my questions and another teacher that I work with, that frequency and vibration of all of life that makes life life.
Yeah.
And I'm very intrigued by the frequency and vibration work that you do, and that, for the lack of maybe a stronger vocabulary in this, that even getting those sounds that you are working toward to bring to the world truly bless your soul, that we can have that due to works like yours and not have to understand the words or these languages or any of that, to just have that frequency and vibration. For if the Creator and Jesus spoke forth, and this is my other teacher's quest, is that perhaps we have lost some of our specific power, in that we don't have those specific frequencies and vibrations in our English language to really call forth. All we have is our intention and our heart, our love, by which to call forth and these the quality of life that we so deserve and that was intended for us. And that you are doing this work to give us that specific frequency and vibration, because so much has been lost in that story, that God's original language was left in with a specific people and what was the region in Mesopotamia or something to that effect that may no longer exist, but it exists within our DNA. And bless you for the wisdom and the knowing and following that call. And you were saying in the entry of the show how the listening, and just like if you are doing your presentations, that you're speaking to a person's heart and you don't even have to understand what's being said. It's just hear me, or just be open and be present. And part of why I got on today, I've been attempting to get on for 4 or 5 days, and this has been a progression in my works with all of you and speaking to everyone. Now, I even texted Michael, as much as I really don't ever like to impose anything, you know, especially with as busy as he is in the moment, listening and just hearing, and hopefully this serves anyone listening, just processing with Rex very strongly, and with, I think it was Julie from Colorado, just sitting here listening to this radio show is an incredible gift, and doing your own personal work, putting all of this together in your, you know, within yourself. I had been 4 days physical thing in my heart chakra, in my spine, in my back, right where I can't touch it, right where I can't reach it, that whole thing. Done everything known to address this. And processing through the worksheets, I was like, okay, well, I've got rage held in my spine, as Michael would attest. And whatever Rex was saying, and just putting all this together, just listening is the point, and hearing this possibility that we have through this show and each other, that thing just popped. It moved. It's completely gone. And I didn't get to get on cue to ask what I thought in my mind were the questions or intention that I was putting forth for my own need. And I ended up putting, just going down, like in Sweat Lodge, you just like, once you're up and boom, you're down, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this, I have to say, miraculous, just totally beautiful, self, whatever, just went into a still point that came out of nowhere with not even the intention of going there, that lasted for nearly 2.5 hours. And maintaining my composure now, thank you, everyone. And as I say, if there's so much you think you don't understand, if you do, just listen to this show and stay with in touch with each other. It is, I can't find words for, this was the big one, Dale. I was there. I was in his presence, in the presence, and it was like watching a movie of and hearing the messages of you will not be marked by your years. All of the veil was just dropped. All of the blessings in the faces of those whom I know and love, who need prayer and healing. And it's just like, it's granted. It's done. I had a really difficult time in that energy, though. My whole body was shaking. I was numb. And I was like, I thought I needed assistance. Anyone around me having witnessed this experience would have been dialing 911. But I promise anybody that's listening, it's not about even telling my story. I hope this serves you, that just don't be afraid. But I did. I was texting Michelle. I was texting Rex, and I texted Michael. I'm like, all right, I'm just here in reentry. Where am I going to be when I pop out on the other side of this thing? And but I cannot thank you enough and encourage people enough that what you may not be understanding of a lot of this, if it's like way over your head, you'll get there. Your soul's hearing it. Every cell of your body is hearing it. And I can't thank you enough. The question, though, that, like I say, that whole frequency and vibration thing, I'm excited to get more familiar with your work in that and be able to really, truly be a stronger witness and a confirmation for others that all of this is real and is very possible, and excited to be in a position of teaching this myself. And I'm just thank all of you.
You're very welcome. Thank you for the call.
Thank you very much. Yeah, you encapsulated a lot of what my first book, Echoes of an Ancient Dream, what it actually does is it's become about going back to the earliest known sources of a lot of the sounds that eventually made up the Aramaic and Hebrew alphabets, and what those sounds meant over the passing of time, and also how the way the letters were written exemplified what the sound meanings were. And it's actually very profound. It's an amazing thing that if you go and even take as an example the words of Jesus and break down the colloquial words that he was using, you break down those of the sacred teachings that were coming out of his mouth that are written on the page, at least. You break those down even letter by letter and speak them consciously, even without having knowledge of what those words mean in Aramaic or Hebrew. You actually, what they believed in ancient times was just speaking it, that you brought yourself into an actual experience of what those sounds exemplified or meant. And it bypasses, again, the mental. It's about the experiential. Wow.
And while we're right here, if this helps anybody, and I don't profess to know it all, but just this experience is still very fresh for me, that if you feel like you can feel every cell in your body, you're not having an anxiety attack. It is almost like you can feel yourself dematerializing, and it is so freeing. And I mean, what you were describing I get much the same way when I tumble onto something, when you're sitting at your desk and you feel the vibration, and it really, your cells feel that. I mean, if the cells are even real, I mean, your soul just knows it, and the organism responds in kind to truth. And for people just not fear that and just trust. And it was the position that I was in yesterday. I was like, okay. you just fully trust, because it's just, you know, in these past months, it's further confirmation that it's just you and God. I mean, it's just you and the Creator is all there is anyway, and truly. And just trust those feelings and those vibrations and that capacity to heal through your hands. And that was like the last physical experience coming out of that, where I felt like I was more, you know, had returned out of the still point, was that I felt that back in my hands probably more strongly than before. I hate to even speak of it, but I had an illness that lasted for about 5 years, and that's where I've been rebuilding myself and getting back, but more confirmation of the power of our hands. And the works, and to be very conscientious of everything that we do, in fact, do with our hands. And the gift.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you for the testimonial. And let's see if we've got anybody else. We've got 10 minutes left, or maybe 9. See if we have another caller that's got a question for Dale. And thanks for that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sonny, for being patient with getting on the show this week. So you're right, Dr. Chen. We've got our last caller, probably Julie from Ashland, is on the line. Let's say hello.
Hi, Ken. This is Julie from Ashland, Oregon.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome.
I'm coming through okay. Dale, I've been listening to your 5 Layers of Conscious Creation tapes or CDs lately. And, you know, like Michael Rice's DVDs, and there's always something I didn't hear before. So what I'm hearing, and I'll just preface by saying I've been having resistance to being conscious, and I've been wondering what that is, you know, what is that, and why am I afraid of, you know, being that conscious? And so I heard in the second disc on track 1, you referred to still point, and I just want to confirm that when you break down a word, a meaning of a word, I think you were saying this earlier in today's show, that it teaches itself. But by the very meaning of the word, it teaches a whole process. And I'm thinking it'd be great if you could share that. And I have one other question that I've had for a couple of years. So I just, I know there's not a lot of time, but I'll just give it another time, another year. In the Still Point track, you went into this meaning of something that meant sudden and also silent.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a word in Italian, in musical terminology, subito, and it is suddenly silent, suddenly quiet. And I think that is a huge clue for me that I never heard before, that it's not about sitting in stillness and sitting in stillness and sitting in stillness. It's about that immediate, sudden, sobering quiet so that you can see what's going on and come from your heart. Is that true?
Well,
is that what that means?
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you connected with that, because not a lot of people pick that up. It means not necessarily just only that something is suddenly quiet, so much as when you are, it does happen that all of a sudden you're suddenly silent and you're just absolutely still, but it also means that when you are absolutely still, that you are literally lived from that silence, and it happens instantaneously. In other words, it's not like I feel a prompt that I need to walk across the street, but literally I'm prompted from that silence to walk across the street, and you're not even thinking of the observation of, oh, I feel like I need to walk across the street. You just do it. And in fact, that's what the word prophet meant. Prophet meant someone, anbiya, nabiya. There's different forms of the way you can say it in Aramaic. It literally means one who lives from the absolute stillness, from the absolute silence, without judging it whatsoever. They're not, in other words, thinking and intuiting and throwing tarot cards, although those all have their place. life just lives them, and life lives them from that silence, from that sudden space of silence. And the suddenly aspect of it is not only that it comes on suddenly sometimes, but also that there's no time lag. It just lives you. You're not thinking about, I'm going to do this, and then you do it, so much as it lives you. And you're so wholly, fully in faith, coming from the rooted center of your being, that you don't have to second-guess your life. You just live it. And that's the way I seek to live my life. I say I seek to live my life mid-step, meaning that I'm always lifting my foot, and I don't know where my foot's going to land in the middle of that step. I don't know. What matters is that I'm conscious as I'm making the step, and life lives me. It happens in my speaking. It happens in my general life day to day. And it's just an awesome way to be, to always be aware of that, what Eckhart Tolle would call that sacred still presence, that silence, that I just wrote in my book a couple of days ago, like a sheet of, like, water that's so still that it's like a motionless sheet of crystalline glass that is just sitting there, and it lays there still. It's a beautiful way to live.
Oh, that's really wonderful. If I'm the last caller, I would love to ask another related question.
That works for me.
Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Well, about the language of Aramaic and Hebrew, and you were speaking, and I was wondering two things. Where is Sanskrit and all that? And then, like, which came first, the chicken or the egg? And I know it's, anyway, I'll let you answer that. And then the word and the name America sounds like Aramaic. And they changed one vowel and rearranged the letters. And I wondered how that is energetically different, and if you've ever looked at that. And I don't know if I've asked you this before, but is it an energy that we're in that is really stemming from Aramaic, is what I'm wondering, or has it been distorted by the rearrangement of the letters, and shall we tweak it again maybe?
Well, the word America comes from the name Amerigo Vespucci, which was in fact Italian based on Latin. I'm not aware America. I'm just thinking of the sounds that are there. I mean, you could say it in Aramaic. It'd be an interesting thing for me to look into, digging down into the roots of that. And when you ask about Sanskrit, though, Sanskrit goes maybe arguably about 15th, 16th century BCE, and that would put it slightly before Aramaic and Hebrew by a few hundred years. And also Sanskrit is another one of those tonally rich languages that as you speak it, although their perceptions of what this, and that's something that's important, their perceptions of what those root sound meanings were slightly different in meaning. But it's kind of like, you know, 10 people sitting around looking at like a crystal ball, or, well, I shouldn't say a crystal ball, but like a prism. Everybody's going to see different aspects of that from their point of perception. And it's not really how we label the meaning of it that's important so much as it is the tonal experience itself. But Sanskrit, again, yeah, it's one of those tonally rich languages. And most of the Vedas and the Upanishads, most of those are much older than the Torah. And the oldest of the Hebrew texts as well, much older, actually.
So, Dale, thanks for the call, Julie. Dale, let me get you to say a little bit about what's coming up for you. We've only got about 90 seconds left.
Well, if anybody's in Asheville, North Carolina, I've got a still point session tonight. I've been doing single sessions, offering people to be able to do one single session with everybody breathing at once rather than just pairing up, although we do those too. That's on my website, but I'll be in the Midwest in the next few weeks. I'll be in around the Chicago area. I'll be around Minneapolis, and then a couple weeks after that, I'll be in northern Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, going back to New Jersey in a few weeks. There's a lot of stuff going on. The best thing to do is get on my mailing list and sign up for that. I also have a Mary Magdalene Divine Feminine retreat that's happening May 9th through 11th here in Asheville at Mountain Light Sanctuary that only has a couple of spaces left now. That's almost sold out. So we just announced that a week ago today we announced it, and it's almost sold out, and that's only 21 people that we have to cap that at. So,
well, thank you for that. Thank you for agreeing to be here these Fridays the rest of this year. And we look forward to talking to you next Friday. And in the meantime, please, everyone have the best year yet of your eternal life.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
Evolving continuously.